Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about the stuff that we're looking forward to in 2025. But we're also going to talk about a new show that premiered this week that probably would have been on our list of things we're looking forward to if we'd have done it, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
This is true. This is very true.
Oh, hold on. My dog has gotten herself wrapped up in something. She is being extra today. I don't know what she needs, but I guess she's going to join us. So if you hear any puppy breathing into the podcast, that's Ripley. She's being extra needy today. I don't know why. All right. So let's get the title right. Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which is, you know, I feel like they could have found a shorter title.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've had multiple animated Spider-Man shows, and I mean, they still haven't done they did The Amazing Spider-Man as a movie, so. I don't know, Web of Spider-Man? Maybe that sounds a little too dark. I feel like it had a different title when it went into production.
I think it did, and I do not remember what the title was, but Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, I get why they did it.
Me too.
It's because of the song, right? Because the song plays a really big part of the opening moments, right? The opening
and that remix of that song is really, really good.
Yes, it's very catchy. I kind of love it. And it's kind of it's interesting because it's I like the show a lot. Like these first two episodes are giving us a glimpse of some stuff. Like there are some kind of moments of pause that I was going to talk to you about. But overall, from the moment it starts, it's what my memories of the first Spider-Man were in my memory, not the actual execution of the original animated series. Because when you watch the original animated series, we know that, me and Logan are up there in age and stuff. But for you guys, it's the meme. It's the Spider-Man pointing at himself. That's the original series. That's from the original series. There's other memes too, but it's the memory of what I remember it being when I watched it as a kid. It's kind of like Land of the Lost. Like, do you know how the Will Ferrell movie feels like what you remember the watching the TV show Land of the Lost, but then when you watch Land of the Lost, it's so fucking cheap and looks so bad and it's so terrible that you can't watch it. Like it ruins. Like that's how I feel about Spider-Man. What was it? Spider-Man 66. 66.
No, it's no, Batman 66. Batman 66. Spider-Man 67. 67 sounds right. I have the DVD set, but
Man, you're a braver man than me. I did not want to purchase that because I already knew that even just watching the original the Spider-Man opening title sequence, I was like, oh, man, no, I don't want to ruin my memory of it. But that's what it feels like, right? But updated. Like you said, the song is so catchy because it takes the original song and then it does a remix of it. And it's like the both the most modern take of it. But it's also super respectful of that particular song.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's kind of like respectful of my overall thing is Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is it's exactly what you want from an animated series from Marvel, because it's telling something that we've not told before the for this Spider-Man, right? Because it's canonically tied to the Spider-Man from the MCU right now, right?
Well, I think they're shying away from that though, because they're going to be introducing, like, so we see Doctor Strange in the first episode.
Yes, we do. And he said something very pointed, right?
Yeah, that this is not where they're supposed to be.
Supposed to be, yeah.
So, I think that was their way of separating themselves.
Okay. So, that does answer one question that I had, and it was something that I was going to talk to you about, was because of the fact that he doesn't end up at where he's supposed to end up in at school. He's not at what is it called?
Something like that.
Yeah, he ends up at Rockford T. Bales High School, and he has a different mentor at the end. Like by the end of the second episode, we get something very different from him, right? Like it's not Tony that's going to be helping him out. At least it seems like at the end of the second episode. So
Coleman Domingo as Norman Osborn is a bit of like perfect casting. It's one of those things where, like, if we were in the Gunn DC universe where he's like, no, the people that do the voices, we want to get it to the point where it's accurate that they're doing the live action role as well. Coleman Domingo as Norman Osborn in a live action Spider-Man project would be brilliant.
That's what something I was going to actually say, which is that the rumor is that Norman Osborn and Harry are introduced in a very different way in this next Spider-Man movie. There's nothing to say that Coleman Domingo can't be cast, right?
Yeah.
Because it's still an alt universe, but I mean, we're still dealing with the multiverse kind of thing. And it would be a brilliant bit of casting. Like, that is, like, to me, like, Coleman Domingo, like, that is so kind of both leaning into Willem Dafoe and also moving away from him, if you know what I mean. Because he feels like the equivalent of Dafoe, where it's, like, he's an interesting actor that defies, like, I mean, Dafoe, like, we already know, like, he's, like, what, almost close to 80, and he's still working like a motherfucker? Yeah. No, he's not close. He's almost 80. He's like, I think he's like, I think he turned 77 this year. And he's still like literally doing it, right? Like he doesn't feel like a 77-year-old man. Like Coleman Domingo is like, defies, like he has that kind of like tricky, wily spirit that Dafoe has, that kind of gleam in his eye where, put in a different way, where when he's cast, you kind of have that kind of like when Dafoe is cast and he's in like 30 different things a year, right? I never get tired of him. Like I never go, oh man, Dafoe. That's the same way I feel about Coleman Domingo. Like he instantly, I'm like, oh, this filmmaker is smarter. This production is smart because they casted him, because he's always going to do something interesting.
It's so funny that he's become so prominent to me, because like, Coleman Domingo landed on my radar because of a show, Fear the Walking Dead, which was somewhat popular, you know, not as popular as the OG Walking Dead, but like it had enough that they ran it for multiple seasons, and he was in and out of that show over the course of its entire run. And every time he would pop up in the show, it would just be like, God, this guy is amazing. And why isn't he doing more? Like every time I would see him, I would just be like, God, this guy's incredible. Like he should be in more things. And I think, am I wrong? Is he like a stage actor as well? Like he does.
He started off as a stage actor, and then like they, you know, who actually, you know, where he came prominence was, Barry Jenkins casted him in, if Beale Street, Beale Street.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never got around to seeing that.
He's so in that movie. But yeah, and then he just kind of like blew up from there. Like, I mean, he was always a Broadway guy and off Broadway, and they just kind of knew him like part of Sing Sing, his movie that he got nominated.
I've heard good things about that.
Oh, it's great. It's super great. But part of it is part of the reason why he did it and he developed it was because it's about there's a huge component of Shakespeare, and he did a lot of Shakespeare in the Park. Specifically, he did King Lear. He's known like what gave him his huge pop was one year he did King Lear, and he was like the center focal point of Shakespeare in the Park. And his King Lear was like, or Richard III, I can never remember. But anyways, like he got huge acclaim for that, and that's kind of part of Sing Sing is that kind of like Shakespearean. Like he's a lifer that learns like to express himself through Shakespeare, and it's a powerful movie. But he's great.
I love all the work that he's getting. I love all the projects that he's getting to choose. It really does seem like he just doesn't say no to anything, but not that he's getting bad projects. I'm sure he's getting offered a lot and he's just choosing interesting things, but like he is still keeping his toe in this like nerd culture thing. And I really do love that. And one of the things that I loved about him doing the voice of Norman Osborn is, so if you're an old school comics reader, you'll know that Norman Osborn was always kind of drawn like from the jump with this weird hairstyle, the way that they did it, like it looked like he kind of had cornrows.
Yes.
But you know, it was this white dude, and I mean, it wasn't supposed to be cornrows, it was supposed to be this like weird wave or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like I never understood their hairstyle. They translated it to the 90s animated series and made it look kind of like the original comic art from, I want to say Romita is probably the most famous for drawing Osborn. But here, instead of going like, we're going to like cast somebody and then change the look, they kept the look. Cast Coleman Domingo and just said, well, we're just going to have the Osborns be a black family. Like, and we're going to give him the cornrow hairstyle. And it won't be like, what is up with that dude's hair? Why does it look like that? Like, I know that's kind of like weird reverse thinking, but I don't know. I just really love that they went with it and was like, yeah, let's just make the Osbournes a black American family, and we'll just keep that hairstyle.
No, absolutely. It's a brilliant, like, you know, it's funny that you were saying that because when I was watching it, my wife kind of was like, what the fuck is his hair like reverse? It is like horizontal
cornrows.
And I was like, okay, so you have to like, I'm like, if you look at the original, and then we had this whole like conversation about it because it's like she goes, "Whoa, yeah, that guy's white in the," and I'm like, "Yeah,
yeah."
I'm kind of like reverse engineering and reverse kind of like, you know, we just don't talk about that. I'm like, but like this is kind of like an ode to that, but also kind of course correcting it because you know he's black now. And she goes, "Okay, that makes sense. That makes more sense." So yeah, like man, like it's like kind of it's a great bit of casting because
flipping the script, like you said, and him being like, we've had plenty of like Osborn being Peter's mentor, but this isn't Osborn being necessarily, well, we don't really know, we'll see, but what it seems like is it's not necessarily Osborn being Peter's mentor, it's Osborn being Spider-Man's like keeper, kind of like Tony Stark was, like the guy, like that's one of the things that a lot of people who take on Spider-Man, especially in live action, stumble over, is this kid creating the things that he creates. Like, how would he have the resources to make, you know, this kind of suit and these kind of web shooters? And so the, you know, MCU solution to that was like, oh, he doesn't. Tony Stark does. And for what I'm guessing is this alternate universe take on Spider-Man, I mean, it's going to be Norman Osborn, right?
Yeah. No, so, absolutely.
Like, which kind of like it's in the current Ultimate Spider-Man run. It's I think it's Harry that winds up creating a lot of stuff for Spidey. So it's kind of vibing with that. But yeah, I think that's a really good take on it. And it'll be neat to see how they do a Green Goblin, if and when we get to that.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be Harry. Like,
we didn't get introduced to yet.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, you remember this is also a great time to talk, since we're talking about Harry. We can talk about Harry and Lonnie at the same time, because they both have, Harry gets introduced being run, like, you remember, he's the kid that's getting chased by those three.
That's right. I completely forgot about that. That's in the first episode, isn't it?
Yes. And okay, so can we talk weird, like, it wasn't really weird, but it was like, wow, okay, you're gonna go there. Is both Lonnie and Harry have a very kind of like, so like, this show is very poppy, very bright, very positive forward, but then, and I'm not, okay, like, guys, don't take it the wrong way, you guys know me, but it's the question I have, which is that why is the way that they treat their Black characters is very different than the way that they treat Spider-Man. And I had to pause for a second when you have the moment with Lonnie where he's friends with, like, he's becoming friends with Pete, and then Pete's like, okay, well, I gotta go. And then Lonnie's like, okay, well, I guess I should get going. And then we have this like three or four beats of like this whole entire section of it where Lonnie goes home and Lonnie is traced by the cops. He's looking at like his part of town is terrible. It's run down. He comes into his house and it's like, you know, like, he's having to take everything on. It's like, and then like Harry being chased by these three white kids, like, who are basically going to fucking kill him for the money in his pocket. And I'm just kind of wondering, it's like, I'm not saying anything other than, wow, you go really dark here with this. And if you're going to do that, I really hope that this show has a plan for both of these characters, because you can't just do this shit just to do it.
I hadn't thought about this, but you bringing it up makes me think that there might be a plan for to show like this disparate nature between Lonnie and Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have this kid who has everything. Like, yes, he was being chased and was gonna at least get beaten up, if not, you know, killed. But not because he's Black, because he's rich.
Rich, yeah.
And then you have this other character who, like, goes to this higher profile, quote, smart school, you know, is extremely intelligent, and then, like, he has to, I mean, it's a pretty common story, like, getting bused there. Basically for his athletic skill, which, you know, not that he isn't intelligent, but I think if you dig into it like that, that's the reason he's at that school, is because he's a good athlete. Otherwise, the school probably would, you know, because it's shitty, but it's a, you know, it's a true to life kind of story.
But and, also, is very technically proficient, like they make it so that you understand that he's athletic, but he also has this tech, like this
extremely intelligent.
Yeah.
And so it's not just big dumb athlete thing.
Yeah.
Which I definitely appreciate. But yeah, I feel like at some point there's gotta be not necessarily a confrontation, but just like throwing it in, like putting it in Harry's face of like, hey, yes, you do not realize how privileged you are, not just among people, but like just to be a black kid who like doesn't have to do the things that I have to do. You don't have to take a hour and a half ride to school every day and then an hour and a half ride back only to tutor your brother. And like, and I like that they don't make him like, he doesn't seem put upon. Like there might be like a moment's pause of like, my day has been so rough, like I went to school all day, I won a football game and I that none of my family was at, and then I come home and I've got to tutor my brother and like just all of that stuff. But he doesn't, it's not like, oh, my life sucks. He's just like, okay, yeah, this is the way I have to live my life. And I also think it's really funny. I don't know if you saw the comments from I forget the actor that's voicing Peter, but he made some comments about like he was happy that the show wasn't going to be super woke or something like that. Mm-mm, which is really weird.
Yeah, that is very weird that you would say that.
It felt like a coached thing because there's been so much discussion of like, oh, Disney's gone woke and they're going to go broke. And it was just so stupid. And I'm just like, what do you mean? Like, I am to the point where like I'm tired of hearing anybody use that word in any context whatsoever, but derogatorily, I'm just like, well, they cast a character who has been white for his entire existence, multiple characters who have been white for their entire existence and across every format. They're like, we're going to make them black. That in the like derogatory use of the word woke, that is exactly what that is.
100%.
So what do you mean the show isn't going woke? And I don't have a problem with any of it. I think it's all great, but like, and also they Peter's best friend is now a gay Asian American woman.
Yes.
So also, what are you talking about? The show isn't woke.
But also it's just like
it's good though. It's like it's all good. And I'm not trying to be derogatory. I'm just like, when I read his comments a week or so ago and I was like, oh God, like this show might be terrible. And I watched the episodes and I was like, oh no, I really like this. Also, what was he talking about? I'm like, now that's when I'm like, this feels like a coached moment where it's like, you got to go out there and tell them that this show isn't woke.
Yeah. Whatever that means. It's just like, you know, it's just fucking.
It's just people to watch.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, I'm glad that you kind of like talk to me about it because it's like, I just want it to not be a thing, right? I want it to be a part of the story. And yeah. I hope that they pay it off. That's all I care about is paying it off.
Exactly.
Like it doesn't matter. Like it doesn't matter about anything else to me other than paying off like what you're doing and giving me a good story. Like I don't care. Like I like, you know, like you, I'm just getting tired of using that word because basically we know what side is using that word because they've weaponized it now. Right.
Right. It starts off as one thing and then becomes it's like the reverse of something like I guess for lack of a better, like the N-word where it's like it starts off as this derogatory thing and then the people that you're using against take it back from you and are like, well, you know, you're not allowed to say that. Where woke, it started off as, you know, this altruistic, like, stay woke thing, you know, and then now it's been co-opted as this derogatory statement. Oh, you're just woke. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, none of this, it especially on a show that's kind of more or less aimed, maybe not at children, but adolescents. It's just like, okay, no, this is the world that they live in. So it feels stupid to call it woke. But also it feels really stupid to have the guy who's the main character doing rounds going like, yeah, I wasn't interested if we were going to make a woke show. So I'm happy that we're not doing that. And I'm like, yeah, you have characters whose races were changed and a character who's not generally in the Spider-Man mythos, mm-hmm. like made his best friend, like, and she's a gay or lesbian Asian American character. Okay. You're not woke.
Yeah. It like, my favorite part about this is, like, you know, the people that use it, it's like, nobody understands where it came from. Woke was from stay awake, don't go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny that they're using it as a weaponized hard R. Like, I will say that the people that use that in a bad way are the same people that use the hard R. And yeah. And people know what I'm saying when I say that. I don't give a fuck. I will say people that weaponize that, they're the people that in private use hard R. I'm sorry. Yeah. You do. You're a piece of shit. Because, like, it's all about, everybody gets a slice of the pizza. Like, everybody. It doesn't matter. Everybody is out there. Like, you may want to, like, deny it or do whatever, and that's fine. But you know what? Keep it in your own house. Just keep it in your little bubble. You don't need to fucking shout it from the streets, because you know what happens to people that use the hard R outside? You know what happens. The same thing that happens to people who think that they're who decide to do little salutes, because nobody ever forgets to punch a Nazi. If Captain America started it and the punks kept it going, if there's that much disparity from Captain America to the punk to punk rock in the 70s, who all say the same fucking thing, punch a Nazi, might be right? But anyways, we could get off of this topic of what people are calling wokeness to a topic that I really found interesting, because are we setting up Avengers Academy in this show?
So maybe. So for anybody who doesn't know, Nico, who is, if you watched in this show, is Peter's, best friend. And she is a character from the comics. I don't know if she has a code name, but she was in the Runaways. She's in Avengers Academy, in Strange Academy, which is a series that recently wrapped up. She has supernatural based powers. Very, very interesting. It definitely could lead to maybe not Avengers Academy, but something like that.
Yeah, because
maybe even spearheaded by Osborn.
That's what I was thinking, because we don't just have Nico, but we have Amadeus Cho.
Yeah, Amadeus Cho. Somebody from Wakanda.
Yeah.
And
then you also have what's her name? And the only reason why I know is because, oh God, in the comics, what's her name? I'll look it up really quick. Janine Foucault, who's actually the Taskmaster's daughter. Right. And also a person who's in Avengers Academy, and Amadeus Cho, who's a Hulk. Also Avengers Academy. So, like, like, and then of course, Peter or Spider-Man is a part of that too. So like with Osborn being there, it's almost like you're setting up for something adjacent. Like you said, like it may not be Avengers Academy. It may be called something else, but definitely a Young Avengers type of thing, because of the people that you have in Oscorp. I also did like the fact that we changed Kurt Connors. We inversed it.
Yeah, that's another thing where it's just like, again, not to go back to it, but like you switch genders of a character, and also you have the guy going out there going like, we're not a woke show. Like, it's so dumb. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. It's funny, the Connors thing is one of those really persistent characters across all versions of Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And so it's always like this good like touchstone for me when they introduce a Connors who's got one arm, and like, you know, it's going to be this like tragic story of trying to like help themselves and their family, and it's going to backfire. And like, I don't know. It's kind of like the Mr. Freeze thing for Batman. It's like,
yes,
if you can do the Connors thing right, then usually I'm in on whatever this version of Spider-Man is. So, you know, which is maybe why I didn't love the Amazing Spider-Man series, because I don't think they did a good job with it. But
no. I mean, there's very few things that the Amazing Spider-Man did right. Like,
yeah,
I know that we love Andrew Garfield, and I know that it's fashionable to say that, but you know what, guys, go back and watch those two movies and watch how they treated Electro, and it's literally Otho vibes. Like, they literally have a theme. Like, his theme is literally Otho Jr. Like, it is terrible. And like, you know, and Kurt Connors too. Like, they oh man, like, I don't even want to get started on that series and how people have retconned it into being something that it's really not. Also, Peter, kind of creepy. Actually, not kind of creepy, very creepy, especially with the way he treats what's her name? Good Lord, Gwen. I still want to see the director's cut, this 3.5 hour long version of Spider-Man Part 2, because they say that there's like, it's so tone deaf, because it's almost like because of the introduction of Shailene Woodley's Mary Jane, it's almost like they're willing Gwen to die, like, because of the romance that they build at the same time that he's with Gwen. It's almost like, it's like, who the fuck wrote this? Who wrote this? Like, who wrote this thing? This massive, crappy crapulence. But anyways, aside, that's definitely a side note. But back to your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
So, jumping back to like literally the very first set of scenes.
Yeah.
What do you think about the way they did the origin?
I like it, because I feel like now that we've talked about it, it was one of the main questions that I had, but then you talking about it in the way that, like, again, almost tying it to, almost tying things to, Spider-Man No Way Home with the multiverse and Strange going in and trying to fight, like having his fight with, can't even remember what that thing is called, but then also
the symbiote alien thing. Yeah.
It's kind of pseudo symbiote. I wasn't 100% sure, but then
it's definitely of the Venom symbiote, like family.
Yes. So. But then also like my favorite part about it was, like, the fact that it is Stephen Strange's issue. Like my favorite part is that, like, I love, like, my favorite Stephen Strange is the arrogant one that doesn't realize he's fucked up bigger than his ego can chew. And this is definitely one of those things where he doesn't realize how badly he fucked up by doing whatever he did, right? And causing what I feel like is not one, but two people to become spider people. Because we see when Peter is bit, it doesn't die. He doesn't smack it like it normally, like in continuity happens, where he kills the spider. And then he has the spider. We see it run away. And it runs into somebody else's backpack.
Right.
And I wonder if that's going to come back to haunt us.
I definitely think it is.
And if somebody, and here's the thing, is somebody, maybe like maybe Pearl, maybe Lincoln, or maybe Lonnie, maybe even Nico has that spider and maybe doesn't know it. And maybe doesn't even know that they have powers. It's going to be interesting because like that was a very purposeful thing, right? That they did was like they took that, they made sure that you knew that the spider was still alive. And who knows, maybe it's even just the spider itself is alive and has just managed to not bite anybody, but it's growing bigger and bigger and it's going to be something that they took. I like the way that they did it because it's purposely
it's very low key, doesn't require a lot of like setup. Like, mm-hmm. It's just like, bam, bam, this happened. You know, I really like that, too. I'm really, really excited to see where they take it, where they take the whole show. I think the animation is a big jump from what they were doing with What If, which is a little inconsistent in its style. And quality. So this, I think, is a lot smoother. I think it looks better and has me really hopeful for, a little bit of spoilers, a show that may or may not be premiering later this year, The Eyes of Wakanda. So, and Marvel Zombies, which we're supposed to get later this year, right?
October. That's what they've said is October, which that'll be nice. That'll be a nice Halloween gift to us, in place of a Marvel special. That'll be very nice. But we'll definitely see. Because it's overall, like, I feel like this is definitely something like towards the right direction, right?
Yeah, and because this might be a good jumping off point. And in a year where we're coming off a year where we had very little Marvel content to look forward to, even though the back half of the year was fairly stacked for them with Deadpool, What If, and Agatha All Along, and they were all very good. This year, it's a lot of Marvel stuff to look forward to.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's very interesting. Like how they're they've stacked it and it's not there. Like it isn't, how can I put this? It's not there. It's not even like, it's not their doing. I was going to say it's not their fault, but it kind of is, but it's also like, it's another thing where I'm like, I didn't know how to approach it by saying like, it's not their fault, but it's also not their doing because of the strikes that this has become a thing for us. Right. Like it's definitely a thing. And, I'm very interested in where this is going. Because it's going to be the first year since probably what 20, like since what 2022 that we've had a full slate.
Yeah. So you made a list of films that you're looking forward to in 2025.
Yes, absolutely.
I was going to make a similar list. And when I started, I was like, I feel like everything that would be on my list is either something that we've already discussed and would probably be on your list, because generally I'm only down to go to the theater to see the big things and the comic book related things. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to backtrack. I didn't tell you this. I'm going to make a list of television stuff that I know is coming this year that I'm excited for. And some of it is stuff we've already discussed. And we, I mean, we can just, you know, move into the Marvel stuff and just cover it like all at once. Of course, we're excited for Captain America. Of course, we're excited for Thunderbolts. And like, those are the two films we have this year. But like, I don't know if people realize the television slate. I mean, we have Daredevil, Ironheart, Marvel Zombies, possibly Eyes of Wakanda, which I don't think has gotten a full like premiere announcement, but definitely Wonder Man.
Yes. Well, we know Wonder Man for sure. Yeah. That we're getting, we're definitely getting Wonder Man, which is kind of wild, right? Like, that's like I'm like, oh man, that's gonna be kind of crazy, right? So, but anywho, okay, well, how do we want to approach this? Do we want to kind of talk? Do we want to do tit for tat and like I'll do one, or do we want to go by month? You know, there's certain things that we've already talked about that I will not talk about. Like, I will talk about things that, like, we've not actually, like,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of stupid amateur to be like, we're excited for Superman. Yeah, no shit, man. Y'all been talking about it for, like, 4 months.
Exactly. Like the first part of the month, like, the things like The Monkey, Captain America, Mickey 17, Amateur, Sinners, Thunderbolts, Mission Impossible, Lilo and Stitch. These are all things that we've talked about.
The Monkey's on your list, and like, I just briefly, like, Stephen King this year, like, there's always like Stephen King stuff out there, but 2025 feels like so King heavy. Like,
it really does.
The Marvel stuff, I kind of just name checked everything. We don't really have to talk about it. But let's talk. Can we briefly talk about Stephen King? Because I have Stephen King stuff on my list.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So The Monkey comes out in less than, what, 3 weeks, maybe?
It's the end of February. I already have my screening locked up.
Okay, so about a month.
Yeah, it's about a month away.
I just saw the trailer for it, and I'm so excited that they're doing something that isn't like 80s horror vibes full on. It feels funny and scary.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. The tone is like, I love the fact that it's unrepentantly gross and like violent, because the short is like, if you've ever read the short, then you know how wild it gets. Like, I'm not gonna like all you have to do is just like literally just read the short and you'll know what you're in for. And for them to actually, if you've seen the Red Band trailer, like, for them to actually be able to, and it's Osgood Perkins, which like, I'm going to tell everybody, like, if you haven't seen his his PG-13 rated Hansel and Gretel, do it, because it is one of the most terrifyingly weird and awesome like horror movies. It really is, like, and it's PG-13, and I don't know how they got away with it. Long Legs is an amazing,
I still haven't seen Long Legs. I need to go back and watch it. I'm the trailer got me so hyped for The Monkey, and that's what kind of sent me into this, like, oh yeah, it's going to be a big Stephen King year, because we're also I mean, there's not a, like a premiere date yet, but like, we'll probably get The Running Man by the end of the year.
Yeah, actually, November. That's what they're
November.
Saying.
Okay. So, you know, that's a Stephen King adaptation. We don't have a trailer, but it is like, we're the cast director. We've talked about it. We're looking forward to it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, it's definitely, yeah. That one's actually on my list of movies that I'm very much so looking forward to, because it's Edgar Wright getting a huge budget. Like, this thing is like in the neighborhood of $150 to $200 million. And the cast that he's gotten together, of course, again, our dude Coleman Domingo, is in it. And also Josh Brolin. I mean, Glenn Powell, of course. We already know Glenn Powell is, like, you know, he's the man, and he's going to continue to be the man. I was going to ask, do you have his TV series on your list?
What series is it?
The Eli Manning joke. Do you remember that Eli Manning? What was it? Barry Powers?
Oh yeah. Is that a thing?
Yeah, he made a Hulu TV series where he plays that character, and they basically Ted Lassoed it.
Oh my god!
You didn't know about this? Like,
look, no.
Yes, there's even a. It's coming out, I think, in March or April. And it's literally they Ted Lassoed Chad Powers.
That's exciting. Yeah, I'm in for that. No, I didn't know anything about it. So that would have been like a big, like, oh, what is this? Yeah, no, heck yeah. I'm down for that. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, it's basically the thing is that, like, the log line is, when bad behavior of Nukes hotshot quarterback Russ Holiday, Glenn Powell's college career, he disguises himself and walks on as a struggling Southern struggling Southern college football team as Chad Powers.
Yeah, I'm in for that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Like, produced it with the Mannings, like, got together and was like, hey, I want to do this. And then they basically Ted Lassoed it.
That's exciting. Yeah. That would have been on my list. I didn't know anything about it. So the Monkey starts our Stephen King year. We have The Running Man basically ending our Stephen King year in November. Somewhere in here, I think there is a premiere date. The Life of Chuck is coming.
Yeah, it's end of May. It's around, like, it's supposedly counter programming for like all of the big May stuff. But I really hope that they move it. It feels like a fall movie. Because
another Mike Flanagan Stephen King adaptation.
Yep.
I mean,
that's very different.
You can't go wrong. But here's the thing. I just recently read The Life of Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in the Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Shawshank King kind of vein. Holy shit. I'm going to even thinking about that story gets me a little emotional. This movie is going to be insane. Like, the cast is great. Matthew Lillard, Karen Gillan, who else is in it? Tom Hiddleston.
Tom Hiddleston plays Chuck.
Yeah. And
why don't you actually tell them the concept? Because I feel like once people have the concept idea, it's very interesting, and supposedly Flanagan kept the concept and delivers from everything I've heard.
I think it's a spoiler to know any,
okay.
Like, this is okay. One of those things that I still would have read it, but it would not have had the emotional impact for me if I'd have known what the story was.
Okay, you know what, thinking about it now and what the end of it is, yes, okay, you know what, you're right, I'm not gonna, I like, let's keep it if people want to read the story.
And especially since there's not a trailer, because I don't know what the trailer is going to reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is I don't want to say twist. There's more to the story. I mean, it is a end of the world story.
Yes, it is.
That's maybe the least spoiler. Like, it sounds weird to be like, it's about the end of the world, and that's not a spoiler. But but it is.
Yeah.
So, but like, what all that entails is kind of the spoiler of it. And I don't know what the trailer is and isn't going to say. So yeah, I'm really excited for when we'll finally get a trailer for this thing. And like, knowing it's in Flanagan's hands, it makes me so happy. But here's the thing. We're getting also another King adjacent thing, a book that they announced towards the end of last year, I think, called The End of the World as We Know It, which is overseen by King, and it's other writers writing stories set in the world of the Stand.
I just heard about this.
That's so exciting.
Yeah. Well, it's people getting a chance to play, like writers getting a chance to play in a playground that is so vast that has only been like, okay. So like, the thing is that it's always shocking to me that he didn't write more in the Stan universe, especially because, I mean, we're both at this point, it's no spoiler that we're both Gunslinger fans or the Dark Tower fans, how much he dabbled in it in.
Yeah. It kind of like weaves in and out of it a little bit. Yeah.
Yes. And also because we learn the fate of Randall Flagg in,
yeah,
like we literally learn the like Randall Flagg, like we never really get an ending for Randall Flagg in the Stand. We do, but it feels so ethereal that, like, and I think that that's one of the bigger complaints about the Stand, amongst other things, because it's such a drug fueled, cocaine fueled, like Lord of the Rings nightmare. But that's kind of like. Like, to get the ending of Randall Flagg in something that happened 40 years later is kind of weird. But also, yeah, he doesn't dabble in it quite as much as you want him to, because it is so kind of, there's enough corners and enough darkness that hasn't been explored that you kind of want that. And yeah, like, to have other writers do it now, that's kind of brilliant. And him being just basically the producer, like steering the ship, being the Kevin Feige.
Which he's been that for like other like things, but never something in like in his own world, you know? Yes. So that's really, really exciting. I can't wait to read it. But equally so, we're getting another possibly final Holly Gibney book, Never Flinch, also coming out in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
This year, man, this year, like, if any of this stuff is bad, at least we have so much to look forward to. Like, it's unbelievable. So much King this year. But yeah, Never Flinch, after I just finished Holly not 2 weeks ago, I don't think, and absolutely loved it. I know I've said it, King like missed the boat on like having an alter ego that wrote crime fiction, because holy shit, he does it really well. I don't know anything about the story for Never Flinch. I've kind of just kept myself in the dark. Even though I know there's a little bit out there. I love this character. I'm excited for the possible TV show we might get in 2026, but yeah, it's going to be a good King year, man.
It really is. I had quite a few things. Like, I had both The Running Man and The Monkey on my list, because they were like, not just because they were King stuff, but
they sound exciting. And that monkey trailer, I would have I would have passed on the monkey, like much like the Salem's Lot thing. Like it was in limbo forever, and like everybody I know that saw it was like, no, like don't watch it. But then I saw the trailer for the monkey, and I was like, oh, they're doing like, yes, we know this is an insane concept. Yes, we know it's kind of funny that this like monkey with the clang cymbals together is murdering people. We're going to roll with all of that and play into it and make it bloody and violent and ridiculous. And I'm like, oh, I'm here for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, okay. And then another thing I just remembered in my list, another King thing that's a huge pillar that we're finally going to see on the big screen is the director. It's so ironic that the director of Hunger Games, Francis Lawrence, has actually made an adaptation of The Long Walk. We're finally
going to get The Long Walk. Is that going to come in 2025?
Like
that wasn't like, even on my list. I thought they were talking like, I didn't know he finished it. I thought they were talking about making it and it would be 2026.
He's actually in production right now.
Okay.
Like, it started I think in December. So we are like in the like the throes of it. Like he has his cast. He's already started.
It's looking at it now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and he got somebody who I feel like, so like Mark Hamill as the mayor is probably like the best piece of casting. And if they do it right, like, here's the thing is that they do this right, Mark Hamill could get an Oscar nomination for that role.
Oh, man.
I mean, the fact that they have Cooper Hoffman as the lead, for me, for my money, is like the right is the right direction. And I know that like as soon as he casted him as the main character, like Francis Lawrence, like hands off, like it's gonna probably be really, really great. Because Cooper Hoffman, I don't know if people know this, that's the like, I know it's a Nepo baby thing, but when your fucking dad is Philip Seymour Hoffman, and if you've seen him in anything, but I mean if you've seen him at least in Licorice Pizza, you know to just like lay off of that, like just move away from that Nepo baby thing. He's great in Saturday Night, a film that I just saw. So yeah, like it's one of those things where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, like this is a serious ass like adaptation. They're not gonna, like, I feel like Francis Lawrence, because I guess the holdup was R rating, and they finally found the budget, the right producers, and the right kind of swirl to make it R rated. This is like Francis Lawrence being able to go, okay, so I don't have to make a PG-13 dystopian child thing, and I can.
Apparently they've wrapped principal photography. So yeah, we should see it sometime this year.
Yeah. So yeah, like I'm super excited. As soon as I started, like I'm not sure why I didn't mention it right away, because it's on my top five.
I was looking at King stuff, it didn't even pop up on the list of, which I know technically it's a Bachman book, but it didn't even, but so was The Running Man. they're both in that collection. So that's really interesting. We're getting both of those this year. Holy shit, yeah, what an like King is right up there with Marvel for me this year, where it's like, man, like I ended last year kind of like on fire for like this dude and like what his work can be adaptation wise and like now I'm freaking like eating it up, man. I can't wait to see all this stuff and read more stories. So hit me with something else that's on your, because I didn't do my stuff by release date, so it's kind of all over the place.
Okay, so we're going to talk about two TV guys. So this is probably one of my most anticipated movies, because you know me and my punk rockness. So Trey Parker has a movie is coming
out. Does that have a name?
It does not have a name.
Yeah, I was.
You've heard about this, right? At
stuff, and I was like, "Yeah, yeah, the Trey Parker movie that's coming." But there's like, how does it still not have a title? It's coming out this year.
Yeah. So he like so rapper of the moment and probably of the decade, Kendrick Lamar, is starring in this high concept, dangerous comedy that's being released 4th of July weekend. So I feel like. Like, before anybody starts talking shit about, like, why is a white man from Colorado making this thing, remember that Trey Parker is the man who made Cannibal the Musical. Like, yeah. He made Orgasmo. He made Basketball, a movie that has a scene where a woman gets slapped with a huge ball sack. These guys are not on... These guys are, like, yeah, you know... South Park is an institution, but these guys are still dangerous and they make dangerous fucking work. And so the concept for this untitled movie is Kendrick Lamar plays a slave reenactor and he is going out with he's going out with a woman who's also a slave reenactor. But she is a white woman, so she plays a part of the white portion because her family owns the plantation that they're using to do this reenactment. And by some weird mishigosh, both his ancestors and her ancestors end up in the modern day in the plantation. And it's what happens with all of these reenactors and these real life people come in and start to swirl in the modern era. And it's coming out 4th of July weekend. I cannot, like, this is I talked to my dad and I was like explaining to him about this movie because he loves dangerous comedies. And he goes, you know what he said? He goes, that shit sounds like Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing that people say you can't make today.
Exactly.
It's like you can't do that kind of comedy today. But usually what they mean is that they're not saying is you can't do that kind of comedy on a large scale to and sell it to a large audience today. Because South Park does do that kind of comedy every single week. And they have been for like 20 something years. So yeah. Like you can still do it. Like Righteous Gemstones does that kind of comedy.
You
can't sell it to a giant audience. Though those shows have a big audience, but not huge.
No, absolutely. And man, I'm really fucking looking forward to this because it's the right kind of dangerous comedy, right? Because comedy should, like, okay, so like, here's the thing. Comedy should be fucking dangerous, right? But it shouldn't be fuckery. Like, and I'm talking about what Joe Rogan talks about, how he misses comedy. Like, that's fuckery. That's fuckery. That, like, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where it's dangerous because it makes people uncomfortable for the wrong reasons. Because
and it makes you think about things. Like,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's not about being mean to any certain group of people, or it's just about, you know, pushing boundaries and making you think about things. And, you know, I also think it's wrong to say that there aren't comedians out there doing that. I didn't talk about it last time we recorded, but I did text you about watching the new Roy Wood comedy special. And I don't know that he really pushes any boundaries, but he does do that kind of Neil Brennan's really good at it too, where it's like,
yes,
this is funny, but it's making you think. Mike Birbiglia does that.
Yes, he does.
You know, it's really thoughtful comedy and it's more like storytelling than it is comedy. It's really like it irks me when people are like, you can't do what you used to be able to do. Like there were this like swath of white comedians who could just get up on stage and shout racial epithets. Like, that was never a thing, man. What are you talking about? Like,
that's what they talk. Like,
if what you mean is like, Eddie Murphy can't get up on a stage and use the F word anymore. Like, okay, well, good. Like, he shouldn't have been doing it then. And he'll probably, that should be on both our lists. The Eddie Murphy documentary coming out this year from Netflix.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
because like I hope it's good. I hope it talks about the darker side.
Yeah. I think he would readily say now, like, yeah, like I watched that now and I'm like, yeah, that's mean spirit. I shouldn't have been saying stuff like that. The comedy in what he was saying is fine. It's the word that he's using that's not okay.
Yes.
In my mind. I mean, I'm not in that group, so like if the comedy part of it is offensive, then I mean, if you find it offensive, then okay. What I find offensive mostly is him using the word that he's using. All that to say, I'm with you. I'm excited to see if this movie even gets a wide release, what the name of it is. And to see it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like it's going to be wild to see what they're able to what if and when it actually gets released. Because it's going to be like, it's one of those things where I'm like, this is gonna be fucking,
I mean, if people start turning their backs on him release wise, they have Trey Parker and Matt Stone have the ability to distribute things without needing tons of studio help. I mean, I still want to see the documentary, but like they single-handedly rescued a fucking restaurant theme park thing in Colorado, with Casa Bonita or something like that.
Yes.
Because they loved it when they were children and were like, oh, it's gone to ruin. Like, nobody wants this. And they've completely reinvigorated it. And now it's like a kind of like true tourist spot.
And yeah. It's a fucking attraction.
Yeah. And it like, they did it. Yeah. Like, not saying they didn't have investor help but like, it's not a, like, they can get things done. So, like, if people start turning their backs, I'm like, we can't release this, man. I have no doubt that it might just be to, like, some streaming service or to, kind of like the model that, you know, maybe like Louis C.K. did when he, not to bring up, you know, people we don't give a shit about anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did that, like, oh, I'm going to distribute it myself through my own website. And you go on, you pay whatever, and then, you know, you can download the content. Like, they have ways. So I'm sure we'll see it this year. But I wonder if the name thing is the hiccup. That, like, you remember when they were doing Bigger, Longer, Uncut? They kept resubmitting it to get a rating, and they were like, no. And so they, every time they just added more stuff to it, you know? So I wonder if he just keeps going back and forth. They're like, what if this is the title? And they're like, no, you can't call it that.
That would be so great. Like, I really do hope that it's
So I want to jump back real quick because we did forget something on the Stephen King front. Welcome to Derry is also coming out this year.
Yes,
it is. It was on my list, but it wasn't bundled with all my other King stuff. Yeah, so again, going to be exciting. year for Stephen King stuff. So there's
why don't we talk about before you do that, because you mentioned it and we're both super fans, let's just talk briefly about the Righteous Gemstones coming back.
Final season.
And it being a final season, which I'm very disappointed that they decided to just call this one off. But if you're going to go out on top, right? Like, go out while you're...
I'd rather them get a chance to end the story than to have the rug pulled out from underneath them.
Yeah.
I haven't watched there's a trailer out, right? I haven't watched the trailer. Have you?
Yes, I have.
I do know it has, like, there's a movie or a show or something that they're producing. Like, in the show?
Yes, they are. And I will, like, okay, so, like, they still have the, like, they're dealing with that and also with the fucking, the beach community resort that they that they bought. It definitely looks, it definitely looks like they're cooking with gas now. Like, everything that, like, everything that you love about this show, it looks like is back, but times 10. And then they've gotten some new cast members, like Sean William Scott is there. And I'm just excited. Like, it just looks like if they can wrap it up right, if they can land the ending, because I feel like last season, it kind of ended almost perfectly.
Yeah.
And you could have gone off with the Gemstones just being like where they were, but I almost feel like there's a comeuppance that's about to happen to them that I think is going to be like rife for like comedic gold in the darkest way possible. Because I mean, as we know, Danny McBride doesn't make anything unless it's super fucking dark, right? I mean, some of the most anxiety provoking moments that I've had in the last couple of years has been because of the Righteous Gemstones, because it's just, they do some shit in that show that you're just like, wow, okay. But I mean, as long as they can stick the landing, that's all I care about, right? Like the final season, as long as they end on a high note, like you said, before they get it taken away from them, because it feels like, it feels dangerous. Like it's, again, another show.
I mean,
show
it's the thing we're talking about. Like we said it, it's dangerous comedy. Like this show is doing that. No, 30 million people are not watching this show, but it is doing that thing where it's like making you think about things while also making you laugh. And that's it. It's perfect. Like I love the show. I don't love everything the show does. There's been plenty of things that this show has done that I've been like, that's really far, man. really far. But like, instead of like just walking away, like, you know, just being like, all right, well, that's it. I'm done. I'm not going to watch it anymore. I'm like, well, let me see where they go with this. Let me see how they bring this around instead of just immediately judging it, you know, from like a base concept kind of thing. I'm with you. I'm kind of sad that this is the last season, but I've been thinking about like Eastbound and Down, which, you know, kind of started his like television journey with HBO. They went into Eastbound and Down not having a full plan, and like you get past like season two and that show loses something.
Oh, until God, you it get does.
To the, like, it jumps so far off a cliff because it felt like that they were just like, let's just go as crazy as possible. It kind of pulls itself back in the last season, but Vice Principals, they went into like, we have two seasons. That's what we have. And that's the story we're going to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended it themselves. They're ending it themselves. So like it makes me feel a little bit better because I don't want to see them like get to a point where I'm like, what the hell is even happening? Like what are we doing? Like, just crazy for the sake of being crazy. Like, how wild can we get with this? So, yeah, I'm happy that they get to go out on their own accord, you know?
Yes, their own terms. Like, it's very much so, like, one of those things where it's just like, okay, like, I'm okay with this. So, yeah. No, absolutely. So you were going to mention another TV show. So, like, I'm curious.
No, actually, that's what I was going to mention.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, since I actually wrote back to it, why don't we talk about another TV show that you're looking forward to?
So I don't know much about this, but there's a show coming. I think it's on Apple Plus called Murderbot. It's based on a series of books. Here's the plot. A security android struggles with emotions and free will while balancing dangerous missions and desire for isolation, evading detection of itself hacking as it finds its place. I forget what the books are called.
They're called the Murderbot Diaries.
Okay,
they're called,
there you go.
Yeah, the Murderbot Diaries, which is...
So, Alexander Skarsgård is the star of the... He is the titular Murderbot.
But also, you have David Dasmachlin in the show. I'm fucking sold. Are you kidding me? You got a Skarsgård brother, the best looking and the most evil of the Skarsgårds, Alexander, and you've got David Dasmachlin in this show?
Here's the real kind of weird thing. It's Paul and Chris Weiss.
Chris Weiss. Yeah, the American Pie dudes.
Yeah, and Twilight guys.
Twilight guys.
Like, it's such a weird combination of things. I don't know what the tone of this show is going to be. All of these people doing this thing that's also a sci-fi show, and I'm like, I don't know where this is going to be, man. But I'm pretty sure I gotta at least give it a try. So I'm excited just for whatever the hell it might be. It might be terrible.
It could very well be, but
it could be amazing.
seriously, dude. Like, this is some, like,
I think it's coming in like March or April too. It's not too far away.
Okay. All right. I mean, like, that's actually not, like, I'm looking forward to this. Like, I'm super there for this.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's weird. I haven't watched much more of Apple Plus than I've been watching, like, shows I've already discussed. But I kind of started doing this, like, what else is on these streaming services that I just don't know about, so much so that, like, we texted about it. I watched the first episode of Emerald City, which is on Peacock, which we both recently added to our queues, came out several years ago, like seven or 8 years ago. And just was not on my radar at all. I don't think, I did watch the first episode. It's really interesting. We can talk about it more, like, either when I finish it or if you start watching it. So I kind of started with, like, what else is on these services that I'm just not noticing, you know, like, what other content can I look into? And Apple Plus is like a big blind spot for me, even though some of my favorite shows are on Apple Plus. And so I started looking at their slate, and I was like, what the hell is Murderbot? And I just started diving into it, and I was like, oh, I'm in for this.
Okay. I'm looking forward to this. I really am. Like, that's, wow. Okay. Murderbot. Like, that's great. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you need to do. Like, you know.
Because, like, the title, it's like, it could be, like, menacing, but also Murderbot sounds kind of dumb.
Yeah.
So, like, kind of silly. And so, I knew nothing about the books. So I don't know what the tone of this could be, so I'm excited to see. I don't even think I'm gonna watch a trailer. I'm just gonna wait till the first episode drops and check it out.
There's nothing wrong with that, because like that's gonna be like, yeah. I don't mind. I'm not mad at it. Like I'm here for this. I'm definitely here for this. Especially because of like just the tone of it. It feels like the right kind of tone for me. So we shall see as we move forward, but I am definitely in the bag for this one.
So what else you got on your list?
My list. Okay, let's go back. I've got a lot of things, but I also want to just hit certain things that are like of interest. So here's an interesting, like, it's a combo. So the Safdie brothers have decided to make movies like the Coens. They've separated for a bit, and they each have made movies that are coming out in during award season. Both sports films, but both very different sports films. So Benny has decided to work with The Pebble and Emily Blunt on The Smashing Machine, which is a biopic of a MMA fighter that stages a comeback. And I won't ruin the thing because it's a very kind of, it's a very interesting story. But the fact that Benny Safdie is working, the guy who made Uncut Gems, is making a movie with The Pebble is so interesting to me. It also, to me, it points to the fact that The Pebble may understand that he's a little bit in trouble. Like, yes, he's riding a high wave of Moana, which nobody seems to be talking about, but everybody seems to be seeing.
And that movie made so much money, man.
Yeah. But, you know, I watched him on the first Netflix era Monday Night Raw. And I will tell you, the dude still has it, right? He can still produce as what wrestling fans call heat. He still has the heat, right? Which, okay, fine, you know, great. But I'm interested because this is a dramatic movie. Like everybody knows in The Rock's contract that he has it written implicitly that he cannot lose a fight. Right? This is a movie about a man who lost and continued to lose at every point in his career. I am very interested because The Pebble has signed away that right. That tells me that he knows that he needs to change, which makes it interesting. The other one is from Josh Safdie, and that one is even funnier to me because it's called Marty Supreme. They're throwing a whole bunch of money after it. It's starring Timothée Chalamet, but also the thing that interests me the most is Tyler, the Creator, is in it. And it takes place in 1950s New York. And it's about this kid, Marty, who lived a double life as both like this bookish, nebbish, like accountant, but by night, he ended up becoming one of the first ping pong champions. He was in an underground ping pong like championship thing, and he ended up becoming the first champion of ping pong.
Oh wow.
And that's like literally the movie is about his arise and ascent, and they called him Marty Supreme. And so like these two like the Safdie brothers have separated, but they're not like the Coens where it doesn't feel right. It actually feels kind of right for me, and I'm like, yeah, I want to see both because I mean, I don't think that we've I don't know if we've ever talked about it. Like, I mean, we love sports movies, but my big thing is I love unconventional sports movies. And like specifically documentaries, I love them because I want to be in a world. I want to be steeped into a world. But also yeah. when you can do it in a movie, like a narrative movie, man, you've got me. You've got my money. And like, if everybody was wondering why Timothée Chalamet has been sporting that stupid little mustache of his, it's because of Marty Supreme. So like just that alone, that and like The Pebble, like signing away his waiver of like, I have to beat everybody in every fight that I'm in, makes me go, Man, are we gonna have be talking about at the end of the year? We're gonna be talking about which Safdie brother did a better movie.
Yeah, that's interesting to like do this almost head to head. You know,
You know, the weirder part is they're both A24 movies.
Yeah.
So A24 is gambling on both of these movies, but also like they're playing them head to head, like Smashing, like Mario Supreme comes out in December. Smashing Machine comes out in October.
Yeah, that's pretty, it's far enough in the current like release date climate that you got separation, but it is still like, yeah, that's really close to each other.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And I understand why everybody's been in on the Safdies. They haven't done anything that's really piqued my interest, despite how acclaimed everything they've done has been, especially the Sandler picture.
Yeah, Uncut Gems.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just none of it has looked that interesting to me. But yeah, sports films, and I'm with you, unconventional sports films, like really, yeah, you can sell me on that. So yeah, that's,
There's one more. There's a third one that's a sports film adjacent film that I'm looking forward to. We'll get to that one a little bit later unless you want to talk about that.
I mean, yeah. Since we're talking about sports stuff, yeah, hit me.
Okay, it's called Caught Stealing. And it's Darren Aronofsky taking on a crime sports adjacent movie. It's based. Okay. So like, here's where the catch is for us. Okay. So like, first I'm going to tell you it's starring Austin Butler, who plays a baseball player, like a washed up baseball player in the 90s that gets involved with some crime and like the criminal underworld in New York City during the 1990s. Now, where it gets interesting is that it's written by Charlie Houston.
I was about to say, so this is Charlie Houston, who...
Yes.
I will say, I don't have a loving track record for specifically because of two TV shows that he was heavily involved in, yes. Gotham and Powers, both terrible.
But his Moon Knight run, I like. Because yes. I've read that. And so that's what hooked me. It's his novel. It's based on his novel that he's writing the screenplay for with Aronofsky. And then it's Austin Butler. Matt Smith is in it. You might have seen the pictures of Matt Smith as a full-on punk. That's from this movie.
Yeah, with the
mohawk.
Yeah.
The giant-ass mohawk. Yeah, that's
this Regina movie. King is in this? Okay.
Yes. So it's a movie that I'm in the bag for Aronofsky, but what I learned recently is Aronofsky is a huge baseball fan, a huge one. I knew he was a basketball fan.
Yeah, this is a little bit off his beaten path, it sounds like.
But that's what I love. Like, I love when somebody gets out of their comfort zone and decides to do something. I mean, his last movie was The Fucking Whale, you know? Like,
yeah, I don't think I've seen anything of his since Noah, but like, I'm one of the outliers. I thought it was fantastic. And The Fountain is up there with, I can't say it's one of my favorite films of all time because I think I've only seen it twice, but that's because it's so difficult to watch and not get super like introspective and emotional. I'm in for anything, especially something like off the beaten path for him like this. Yeah, I'm that sounds absolutely up my alley.
Yeah, so I'm super excited about this one because it's like it's a 90s New York film and like that's still like from what I understand, it's pre Giuliani. So it's kind of the grit and grime of New York. And it's like, again, sports adjacent. It's kind of like I feel like Austin Butler, like the comp for it would be, did you ever see Against All Odds where Jeff Bridges plays the washed up Quarterback.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. That's a great one. Like, but it feels like that's the comp here. Like, washed up quarterback, getting involved in some crime. Same thing here, Austin Butler. Like, if you give me a beaten up Austin Butler, like, no, I like nothing more in a movie where your main character, who's pretty good looking, or like in fucking Austin Butler's case, fucking super good looking, gets the shit kicked out of him for 90 minutes. I'm sold. I love that. I love it's like the Bruce Willis Die Hard conundrum, right? Beat the shit out of him for 2.5 hours, leave him bloodied and bruised, and you got me slow clapping, right? I mean, because that's half the thing that I love is like my favorite movie of all time is Raiders of the Lost Ark. And half of the reason why I love that movie is that for the entire fucking runtime, Henry Jones Jr. gets the shit handed to him.
He just keeps getting beat up.
And he failed, and it's not even that he's failing upwards. It's just that he refuses to fucking give up. And then finally at the end, when everybody thinks they're smart, he's the smartest dude in the room when it matters. And like, I love that about when a movie can do that, like when a movie can take a character and put them through the ringer. Those are my movies. That's my bread and butter. I love that because there's something cathartic about somebody getting the one up finally, or not. That is just kind of great. That one is something that I'm definitely looking forward to. I figured that you'd probably put it on your list because of Charlie Houston and also just, like I said, the sports adjacent of it all.
I should say I do like Houston as a comic book writer. It's just he had, like, the things he's done outside of that, I like, especially in the like adaptation world or live action stuff, or I haven't loved it. I didn't think Powers was good and Gotham was fun to hate watch, but it still wasn't good. Since we're talking about sports stuff, there's a sports series that's wrapping up this year that's possibly leading into a sports movie that we've already talked about. And we don't have to get a lot into Cobra Kai because we have talked about it, but it is about to wrap up its show. And yes, it's goofy and over the top, but I don't know. It's a comfort thing, I guess, for me. And I'm excited to see like where they wrap that up. And, you know, I don't love how little it looks like it might lead into this new Karate Kid movie, but that Karate Kid trailer is really, really good. And I know we've talked about it before, so we don't have to like dwell on it, but that's, both of those things are definitely on my list of like, I'm excited to see where that goes. Also, one of my nephews has last year started taking karate, so it's become a big interest for him.
Great.
Hopefully we'll get to go see Cobra Kai's not really his jam. He's maybe a little too young to be watching teenagers, you know. But but yeah, the movie kind of looks like it might be more his speed. It's also not, you know, four seasons of something versus like, oh, this is hopefully a 90-minute movie.
Yeah. Okay, so like I should update you. I'm officially into season 4.
Okay.
So like I'm making my way through it. Like I find that I can't devour it. Like I can't devour it in full chunks. I watch like 2 or 3 episodes and then it's enough for me. And then I'm like, okay, I've gotten my fill of these fucking wild ass characters doing wild ass things. And then I go back to doing whatever I'm doing and stuff. And then I come back like a week later. I do it in chunks, right? But it's it's a great way to watch it because it allows me to kind of like ingest everything. I think that I'm officially sold with this season. Though there is a cameo appearance. I'm not going to talk about her because fuck her. That I literally fucking double douched. I don't know if you guys know what the El Duce is, but it's two middle fingers. That's the El Duce. You know, also like that's what we used to call it because of fucking I don't know if anybody knows like Boondock Saints, but I mean, you know who El Duce is. Which I always find funny that they named him an Italian name, but he's really he's the most Irish actor in the fucking world. But anywho, yes, there's one cameo appearance. And I mean, I was slow clapping for Terry. Like, I was slow clapping for him. Everything he does in this season is like, I love you, bro. Like, what I find funny about this show is that it finds me rooting for not like actively rooting against Daniel and rooting for the assholes, which I find weird. Like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't get how it makes me do that, but and it's not like I hate watch the show. Like, I really do. Like, before I was, but now I'm kind of like, I'm on board with it because it kind of found its magic. Like at the end of season three and the beginning of the season four, I'm like, oh, okay, now I get what Logan's talking about. Now yeah. I understand. It's a hell of a fun show. I really do wish, I hope that they bring out I know it sounds weird, but I hope they bring out a Blu-ray box set. Like Netflix is notorious for not doing these kinds of things, but it's a Sony thing. And it's just gotten me more hyped for the movie. And I hope that the movie finds a way to connect it at the end. Like the whole, like I can only hope that at the end there's a stinger with William Zabka coming around, a la fucking Sam Jackson in Iron Man, and saying something stupid. Like just something stupid, like we've got work to do. And like, you know, and then it's just like Karate Kid 2, Cobra Kai. Like something like that, because I've not finished. Like, I already know that I'm only 2.5 seasons away, and I'm not finished with this. Like, I feel like I could go 10 seasons. I could go Fast and Furious with this shit, and I'd be okay. Like, karate in space, give it to me.
I mean, I'm with you. It has this like goofy charm to it that it's irresistible to me, but also. Like, I tend to binge it, but I like that they've, initially, I don't think I liked that they spaced out the last season, but that I can, like, watch 4 episode chunks and not feel like, oh, well, that's it. I'm not going to get any more. So, I'm really interested to see how they wrap it up. Like, what is the final part of this story, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. Like, what is this?
Especially for Billy, like, where do you leave that character? Like, he kind of does need to ride off into the sunset, like, everything working out for him, more or less, but that also feels a little disingenuous to who he is as a character, because, like, he doesn't ever get a true happy ending, you know. So, it's definitely on my like list of things I'm excited for, both of those things. Karate Kid trailer looks really, really good, and and not for Ralph Macchio, who now that you're firmly entrenched in the show, I think you probably will agree, like, the worst actor on the show.
Jesus Christ, he's so bad.
But like, you get to William Zabka and you're just like, this dude, man, this dude. Like, everything he does is like, he knows who that character is, you know?
Oh, he does.
Plays into that, like, he's stupid. Like,
so fucking dumb.
He's so perfect in the show. Macchio sometimes almost ruins it. So, both of those things, on our list of things we're excited for in 2025.
Definitely, definitely. Like, both of them. Like, I'm like, oh shit, this is like gonna be, this is pretty fucking, like, this is like fun. Like, I don't think that people, like, here's the thing, guys. It's not going to change. Like, if you haven't seen it, it's like what Logan says. It's not going to change your life. It's not life altering. But there's a certain amount of comfort foodness with it that you're just like, yes, please. Like, just give me more of this, because it's very much like, okay, so like what it is it's the perfect type of nostalgia. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. That it's exactly what it is. Cause there's like new stuff there, but it also leans heavily into the nostalgia aspect, which it seems like the movie is going to do too, with like kind of getting into some Mr. Miyagi past that we, you know, and the show's doing a little bit of that as well, exploring who that character might have been before we met him.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a perfect hit of nostalgia, but also gives you a little something new. So
definitely. And it's not like my favorite part about the show is that it somehow takes itself super seriously, but it doesn't take itself seriously. Does that make sense? Like, the stakes matter. That's what it is. It's the stakes matter to these characters, but it's done in this thing where it's like, we know this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's a very good balance of tone, like that I feel like most places, like most like of these series do not ultimately these nostalgia things that happen, these nostalgia bombs don't understand tone. And so we get this like wonky ass thing that doesn't work. And I feel like the first season is a little wonky, but it still manages to balance that tone really like better than a lot of things that I've seen, and well worth giving it a second season. And then when YouTube read worst fucking streaming series name, that, I think it failed because of that, because everybody thought it was something else. We all know. You don't have to ask me how to, what would have happened if they Googled that.
Yeah.
We know what the top hit would have been, and when they clicked on it, oh no. But anyways, but it's like, it's just, it works, and it works in the best way possible. And so I'm on board. I've officially on board, and I'm very, very excited about this. So we will see where it goes.
So give me some more your movies that you're excited for.
Okay. So, Highest to Lowest, which is Spike Lee and Denzel Washington's remake of High Low, the Kurosawa Ed McBain adaptation.
Yeah.
It's about a billionaire who is put with the, like, I love this idea for this year, this era, a billionaire that is put into a moral quandary when his chauffeur's son is kidnapped and they think it's his son. And it's what happens when the police and the billionaire have to work together to solve this, and what happens. Like, Spike Lee doing this with Denzel Washington in New York.
Here's the thing. I'm with you, except the last time Spike Lee made a movie, remade a foreign film, it was not good.
No, it was not.
So I want to be fully on board with this, just because Spike Lee, Denzel, like, yes, but like, track record of Spike Lee remaking a foreign film. We only have one, but man, that one was not good. So
it was, it definitely wasn't, but I'm going to counter.
This is a more straightforward story than that was. So yeah, I'm a little less hesitant, but yeah, man.
Like, also, if Denzel Washington had starred in Old Boy, if he had starred in Old Boy,
yeah,
be fucking shit. But I don't think it would have been as bad. I think that Denzel is a quality king, and he would have never allowed that shitty ass.
I mean, you say that. Yeah. Well, I think we're on opposite ends of Gladiator 2, right? Like, you fell more in the like, oh, this is all right, and I fell more in the like, what the fuck is this? So
this is true, but like it's one of those things where like that hotly divided kind of take on Spike Lee is what's going to kind of fuel this movie, because it's definitely we knew what Denzel and Spike were doing when they took this on. Like they knew, like everybody knows, the writing was on the wall. And now in 2024 or 2025, at the end of the year, this is going to come out. This is going to be a hot potato, and I'm there for it, just because I want to see what they do with this. And like, you know, just to see, like, I've heard that the script is like legitimately great, like as good as Kurosawa's script for High Low, but done in a way that only Spike Lee could do, which gives me a lot of hope, because I almost wonder if they're going to flip the script and they're going to make it something very different and very damning, which, man, I'm here for. So there's that. And again, guys, these are like, we've already talked about the big tent poles. You guys.
Yeah. That's why I left some of that stuff off my list too, where it's like, when I was looking at movies and trying to make a list, I was like, yeah, everything I'm super excited for is shit that we've been talking about forever. And that's why I like the Marvel TV stuff. I was like, yeah, all this is supposed to be coming in 2025. Of course I'm excited for it. Okay, so this is where we're going to leave you, because there were technical difficulties. And unfortunately, about the last 30 minutes of the podcast did not record. I'm going to blame my dog. So go check us out, xwingfiles.com. Go check out our written work over at Adam's website, themovieisle.com. And we'll be back next week. Sorry for the hiccup. It happens. Doesn't happen often, but it happens. Thanks. Number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Cal, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say hello together if you're with me now. Nerds.